even get it working. I still commend you for taking the time to come and just be together. You know, a lot of dads, for good reason maybe or not, decided they couldn't do this, and you guys did. I appreciate that. And I think we need to start a revolution in our country where dads and daughters talk, they enjoy being with each other, they understand the benefit of being with each other. I'll give your girls a little tip if you're talking to dad. Sometimes it's best if you let him do something while you're talking to him. My wife learned that, and we usually go for a walk every day for about an hour. And that's one of the commitments I've made, is every time I'm home, if she is available, then we're going to go for a walk. And she finds that I talk a whole lot better when we're walking than just sitting there looking at her. And men are different that way sometimes. We like to be doing something. My daughters used to catch me stacking wood or doing something, and they knew that I would talk better if I was doing something. I'm not sure why that happens, and some men aren't that way, but that's part of the fun of relationships. You get to figure them out, and you get to be committed to actually communicating and doing things in a way that actually works. And I think that's part of the fun for all of us, whether it be me doing it with my daughters or my wife or me or them doing it with me, trying to figure out how in the world can I be a part of your life and be positive for all of your life and really have that influence that I think God put me on this planet to have. And hopefully you can keep working on that. And if you haven't done a good job of it so far, get better at it. That's all there is to it. When you're not good at something, just keep working at it and figure something else out. We've been talking about some simple principles. And again, I'm talking about those because if we're going to be okay in life, if we don't grasp the simple, easy stuff, we'll never get the complex stuff. And really, I don't think there's that much complex. I really don't. I think most of the problems in life happen because of ignoring the simple and not even knowing what the simple is. And in the book of Job so far, we haven't really done rocket science stuff. I mean, the very first thing we looked at is how Satan works. And he works at envy, really. All he wants to do is destroy the good. He could care less about you or anything else. He just doesn't want you to enjoy what God made. He doesn't want you to enjoy the earth. You know, the day like today. He really doesn't want you to enjoy it. Somehow he wants you to be bitter about something, angry, miss the whole beautiful day, just miss it. He wants you to live that way. And we have to understand that's how he works, and then we can help each other by reminding him, by reminding each other and being there for each other, saying, no, that, you know, Satan hates the fact that you might enjoy a relationship with a dad because he knows how powerful that is and how wonderful that is. So he doesn't want that. So he'll try and destroy that. Satan hates that you have a relationship with your mom or with other Christians or with, you know, doesn't like that. So he'll do everything he can to destroy that. And again, it's not because he benefits. It's the envy thing. All he wants to do is destroy it because you have it and he can't. And it's really weird that way, but that's what happens. The second point was simply that he loves to mess with the concept of love. Because if we don't understand love, then we can't even understand God because God by definition is love. So if we mess up on the idea of love, we can't understand God, then we can't understand family, and we can't understand how we're supposed to live because we need to love the Lord our God, we need to love each other. He's counting on people to mess this one up. He is counting on us to think love has to do with money and things and giving it my way. And that doesn't have anything to do with it. We talked about that earlier. Now the third point is extremely simple as well. Because now we're switching scenes in the book of Job, and a majority of the book of Job is about this next point. And it is so long that I'm not reading it to you. In fact, some of you, if you've been following me, are going, yeah, you got 4 points in the book of Job, and you're still in chapter one. You know, and you only got, and two of them came from chapter one. Well, I know that. The third point comes from most of the rest of the chapters in the book of Job. And that's why I can't read them all to you. And I would encourage you to read them sometime, you know, completely. But I can't read them to you here because that would just be a lot of time telling you things that you could read on your own. But I do want to tell you something, that Job had some really good friends. It tells us in Job 2, now when Job's 3 friends heard of all the evil that had come upon him, they came each from his own place. Now, I just want to lay this out for you a little bit. These 3 guys that come to him right now are very good friends. They're not bad people. They're friends. They like Job. They're part of his inner circle. They're part of, you know, they're good guys in a sense. It's very interesting how you know that, because what they did is they came And in their time, they're you know, not Swedish, because Swedish people don't do this, but they came and they actually tore their clothes and they sat on an ash heap. And, you know, that would be really weird for us Swede people. We don't tear clothes and we don't sit on ash heaps. But that's what they did back then. They sat on ash heaps, and what they did was they were identifying with Job, because that's how they showed sorrow. All right? And not only did they do that, but they sat with him for 7 days and didn't say a word. Tore their clothes, sat in an ash heap. They were good friends. They were coming trying to support Job. I mean, you know, there's a lot of times you don't know what to say when something happens to somebody that's pretty tragic. Then don't say anything. If you don't know what to say, don't say anything. Don't make it up. Don't try and say something. Just don't say anything. It's very, you know, I've been to a lot of tragedies in my time. I mean, funerals, unexpected deaths, that kind of thing. And what I've learned is that I just need to stand there. Just stand with them. Just stand there and be quiet. If they're a good friend, I might put my arm around them. I might just stand there. The most I might say is, I'm sorry. And you know what? I've had more guys come back and say, thanks, that meant so much. I'm thinking, I didn't do anything. Really, I didn't say, I didn't do anything. When my dad died, you know, for me that was a sudden death. It was very tragic. The thing that didn't help me was all the people that came and quoted me verses and I couldn't survive. That didn't help, actually. I knew those verses. The best thing that happened was people came and just stood by me. They just stood there. They understood my sorrow. They understood my pain and they wanted to share it with me. That's what these guys did. They were good friends. They did not come and lecture him right now. They didn't do anything of the sort. They just stood with him or sat with him for a whole week and were just quiet. Now, the reason I want to point that out to you is because sometimes we mix up some things. We think if somebody's a really good friend, then they should have a tremendous amount of influence and we give them a tremendous amount of influence over us. Now, you and I are people. And I'm still learning and growing, and there's things in my life that I'm not going to understand yet. There's things that you're not going to understand. And the interesting thing is, it's too bad, a lot of the messages that I speak are recorded, and you can go back and listen to them. And if you go back about 10 years, you'll see I'm teaching something different on certain things. It's not that 10 years ago I didn't believe what I taught. It's that I've learned some new things since then. And people need to give me the freedom to continue to grow. Otherwise, you know, I'd have to go back and just try and prove things just out of pride or something. So I'm changing and growing and developing. Now, all of my friends need to understand that. I can help. I can say things. I can tell them what I think. But actually, 10 years from now, I might tell them something different, a little bit different, because I've learned more and I've matured more. I've got more experiences. Now, the problem that we have oftentimes is we have friends and they influence us and we don't realize that we have this little mental block thing going. Because they're our friends, we allow them to even influence us in a bad way. You see, they can be good friends and still be wrong. And that's what's hard to separate. Because sometimes people say, well, I thought I was your friend. You are, but you're still wrong. You know, Dave Liska, good friend. He's a Bear fan. He's wrong. I mean, that's all there is to it. Still love him, still a friend. That's okay. One day in heaven when it's green and gold streets, he's going to know. The interesting thing as you go through there is how much of this chapter is devoted to these three guys. And you can't help but back up a little bit and say, why? Because we are so influenced by other people. You have heard the phrase, you know, peer pressure. Well, it's true. We are so influenced, and it's not just for your girls' age, it's for us at my age. We are so influenced by what other people say. I get into a lot of discussions with people, really, in many situations about what the Bible might say, and a lot of times what they will say is, well, this guy says this, and this guy says this, and I usually stop them and say, that's fine, but what does the Bible really say? Let's take a look at what the Bible says. He goes, well, you don't understand, this guy believes this. I said, that's fine, but let's take a look at what the Bible really says. And they're saying, well, you have to look at what people say. No, you don't. You need to study what God says about it. Not that I'm being disrespectful or anything. It's just the matter that I know that we as people change. Not only that, I know that we're sheep. God calls us sheep. Do you ever know anything about sheep? Besides having 7,000 of them, you know, but, yeah. Sheep are very interesting. I've done some studying about sheep, and I've actually taken care of sheep, and I've been amazed at what they do. I mean, once I was throwing hay out for sheep, and because our farmer wasn't there, we had a farm at one time, and all the sheep, I come out with the tractor, and all the sheep are running around a big circle, you know, and I don't care. I'm just dumping the hay and getting out of there. And I dump the hay, and all of a sudden, a kid comes out of the house, runs, jumps the fence, and tackles one of the sheep. And I thought, I'm amused. You know, I don't know what you just did, but it is amusing. And then he got up, and he was all dirty and everything. I said, so what are you doing? He goes, oh, these sheep, they run in a circle like that. They'll run to death, because we got to stop one of them. Oh, how brilliant. You know, I mean, they will actually just keep following each other, and they're all furry and stuff, so they get too hot and overheat, and they die. And it's like, this is not smart, I thought. I don't really care. I'm dumping hay off, and I'm leaving. But it was amusing. Now, what's interesting to me is that God calls me a sheep. And it's not, I used to think it was because I was dumb, and I realized it's not that. Here's what the sheep have in them, way inside of them. They have this huge desire, stronger than any other desire, to follow. They're followers. And so when one starts something, they all do it. This is their great desire. Now think about that. God calls us that. I want to tell you, it is not unusual for you to have in your heart a desire to follow. People at school, people at work, whatever. It's not unusual for us to think, I want to fit in, I want to follow, I want to do what everyone else is doing. See, that's not unusual. Now here's what is very important to understand. That in everything that God created us, it's got a really good reason. And if I was made to be a follower, then there's a good reason for that. Because I can also choose to follow the right way. See, I can follow God, and I can follow those who love God. I can do that. I can choose to do that too. But that's what I have to know. I have to know the difference. See, I honestly believe this, that Dave Wager was created to follow God. And so I'm constantly looking to follow. And Satan knows that. And he knows, I'm just trying to get you to follow the wrong one because I don't really care about you. I just want to make you miserable. So you can follow this person. You can follow this person. You can follow. See, that's part of his strategy is to get people in your life. And the people have to get in your life. And one of the ways he gets them in is by having your good friends start doing something. See, because then we have a hard time telling them, you're doing something wrong. See, we don't want to do that. And in our culture, it's hard because... You know, I honestly have good enough friends where I can tell them, I think you're wrong and let's go out to eat. I mean, it's not that I never want to see you or talk to you. I said, I think you're just flat wrong. In fact, there are conversations, I just had one yesterday, there's some very big named people in the evangelical world and I have private conversations with them. Because they're doing something, I'm saying, I don't know, and I'll, you know, in fact, the guy called me the other day, said, call me, and I called him back, And he was asking about this one issue, and when I was done, I couldn't remember because he caught me with a cell phone walking around camp, and I didn't have all my facts in front of me. I said, look, I'll get back to you. And I wrote him a, you know, 3-4 page response when I got home because I looked up the facts that I needed. And at the top of it, I said, this is a private conversation. The two of us are public people. And I've decided to talk to you privately about this and not publicly about this. And I've done that for a reason. And he agreed that that's a good idea. Why? Because I need to say some things that I don't want taken out of context with somebody else. And you need to say some things, and we are friends, and I want to make sure that we can talk to each other honestly. Because in our media world, it gets twisted around. And I also know that people... love following, and that's one of Satan's tools. In the book of 2 Timothy, when you go in there, the 4th chapter, Paul is telling Timothy how to teach. And he says, reprove, rebuke, exhort. So first he says, preach the word. And then he says, reprove, rebuke, exhort, with all authority. But then he warns him, he says, but what's going to happen is many people will just go find teachers that say what they want, and they'll follow them. Why? Because we're sheep. So we'll just find whoever says it the way we want it. Girls, one of the most dangerous things you will ever get involved in is just finding somebody to say what you want and then choosing to follow them when somebody who actually loves you is saying something opposite and you're not going to listen to them. And that's exactly what we have to do with God. We have to understand that he's not going to always tell us what we want to hear. But he's always going to be frank with us. He's always going to be honest with us. And that's important. See, friends can still be friends, but they can be wrong. Very hard to grab that one. In fact, if you go through here, you will see what kind of challenge that Job actually had. I guess they were pretty good friends. However, there are some things that he did. In Job 4 and 5, this guy Eliphaz replies to Job that he should have confidence in his own righteousness. See, here's the dilemma. If they didn't really understand God and his love, what they were thinking is, Job, I just watched you get wiped out, man. All of your money is gone. All of your assets are gone. Your children are gone. You are boils head to toe. Your wife is not giving you good advice. You know what they're thinking? You must have done something wrong. You must have done something wrong. God's going to punish you. Let me ask you this. You know the story. Did he do anything wrong? No. So they were wrong on that one. Do you realize that, you know, when I told you about my illnesses, the different sicknesses I have, that kind of thing, is it because I've done bad things? Did I get cut from a no-cut baseball team because I was a bad person and a very sinful person and God wanted to beat me up a little bit? I was a bad baseball player. That's probably why I was a Cub fan most of my life. You know, it's real. Yeah. I know there are some. I heard that. When you start thinking about the logic that we have, do you know that there are some people that actually believe this about God? That he's a very angry God. And if you step out of line, he's more than willing to slap you around and beat you up. That's not the God I know. That's not the God revealed in the Bible. The difference is this. God wants you in his family, and he wants you to be successful, and he wants you to know how things are made, and he wants you to live in that context. Oh, and yes, by the way, if you choose not to, he might get tough with you. That's his prerogative. But it's not because he's trying to mess you up. He's trying to bring you back. And that's very important to understand. In a world that you live, most of the time when I go to speak to people who don't know God, most of them have an understanding of God, very much like the Islams believe about Allah, which means he can never be satisfied. He's always angry. There's no way to please him. That's not true. That is not anything that's revealed in the scriptures. So what happens here is that Job's three friends, even though they're good friends, come to him. And they start telling him all of this stuff about, Job, we want you to get better, but here's the deal. You know, Eliphaz first comes, and he basically, if I were to summarize him in Job 4 and 5, he'd be saying that Job's troubles are there because the Lord is rebuking him. In other words, they're saying something, you know, God just doesn't beat on someone, Job, really. What is their idea again? They have no concept of this other war that's going on, this other battle that's happening. Sometimes when I talk to Christians in our country, it's the same thing. It's like something, they get sick, and I don't know why God's doing this. There's a big war going on. You know what I think that has happened to all of us? I think that we've had forever or eternity stolen from us. In other words, we don't think about that. We think about right now. But we forget that there's a bigger picture in the whole thing. You know, think about it for a second. If you live to be a ripe old age of 95, you've outlived most people. Right? So let's say you lived 95 years on this earth. You're going to be 95 billion years in eternity. And that's the first day. In other words, you're going to be dead a whole lot longer than you're alive. If I can say it that way. And what Satan loves us to do is focus on right now, being alive right now, and forgetting about billions and billions and billions of years. See, when God created you, I believe that he created you with eternity in your heart, in your mind. Satan knows that if you think that way, what's going to happen is you'll make decisions that way. So what he wants to do is get you focused on the immediate, right now. And friends sometimes help us do that. I mean, they help us focus on just now and forget future. One of the great stories is Esau in the Bible. You remember, if you know that story, but But Esau sold his birthright, gave up the future because he was really hungry in the moment and wanted a bowl of stew. And he gave up everything for that. It's like, oh, I'm so hungry, it doesn't matter. I just give up my future. Who cares? I'm so hungry. Yeah, sure, I don't need a future. I need it now. And he ate the bowl of stew. All the rest of the way through Scripture, God used him as a bad example. You know? I mean, really. And whenever you talk of God, it's the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, his brother. It should have been the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Esau. Whoa. For a bowl of porridge? Yeah, bad move. You see, nobody in his life really was there to tell him, bad move. Not good. True friends, people who love you, are not afraid to tell you when something is obviously not right. Because they love you. It's amazing. I saw it. We're so messed up on friendship. As you know, we have thousands of people go through here. In 1 year, there were some young people here, and there were two guys, and one guy got a bunch of cough medicine and overdosed on it. And he overdosed badly, almost died. His friend watched him do it. And instead of that night coming to get me or somebody else, he went to bed. In the morning, we had to take some drastic measures to try and save this young man, and we did. And his punishment was he had to stick by me for a couple days. Couldn't be out of my sight. Well, I just wanted to talk to him. But I did bring his friend in, and we talked to him. He said, why did you let him take those pills and go to sleep? And he said, well, I'm his friend. I wouldn't rat on him. You know what we told him? You weren't his friend. I'm sorry, you weren't his friend. You can believe whatever you want about this lie. But you were willing to watch somebody harm themselves, and friends do not do that. So call yourself something else. You know, it's really interesting. We have this silent code in the world of young people. I am not going to rat on a friend. It doesn't work. If you see somebody that's hurting themselves, the most loving thing you can do is make sure that they have to talk to somebody about it. And for a while, they may not think much of you. But later in life, they'll thank you. You see, friends have this weird power over us that we give to them because we are these sheep and we want to follow. We have to be very careful that we follow the right one. I don't know if you've ever heard of Icelandic leader sheep. It's a different breed than most. They're called Icelandic leader sheep. You know why? They're the one breed of sheep that leads. They don't follow. They will actually watch the sheep. And if they get too neck and close to the edge, a leader sheep will run out there and get in front of them and turn them away. They are actually known in Iceland. They're bred in Iceland. And they will actually been known to be in the barn, and if a storm is coming, to refuse to go out and to make a big ruckus because they can somehow have a sense that it's coming. See, they're different than other sheep in that they actually lead. And they know that other sheep follow, and they want to have a positive influence on them. And I believe that's the story of the Christian in the world in which we live. We know who to follow, and we do what we can to get others to follow the one that we know that we need to follow. And we don't try and pretend we're not followers. We are. I don't know how many young people have said, yeah, I'm an independent person, I'm not following anyone. And they're dressed like everybody else. And they're using the language that everyone else uses. It's like, no, you are. I am not. Yes, you are. I don't know who invented that like worn out jean look thing. I'm still old enough to think I'll never buy a pair of worn out jeans. Why? I wear them out after I wear them. I'm old, I know. But then I have guys come and say, look at man, I'm, you know, and like, you have worn out jeans, you have worn out jeans, you have worn out jeans. Yes, you're all very independent thinkers. What happens is we follow. We just get creative on what we say about following. Job's friends, Eliphaz, He came and basically said, God's punishing you for being a bad guy somehow. We don't know how it is, but that's how God works, he thought. See, they misunderstood God. He misunderstood what was going on. But he didn't mind sharing his opinion. He just misunderstood. Then Bildad, the other guy, another guy, he replied, arguing for God's justice. If you look in Job chapter 8, he said, if Job is blameless, then God will uphold him. He basically said, look, if you didn't do anything wrong, then you'll be fine. But look, you're not fine. So you must have done something wrong. Now, we all know the story. He didn't do anything wrong. Interesting. Zophar, another friend in chapter 11, he replies, accusing Job of sin. He just came and outright said, man, you've sinned. You must have. God doesn't do this. But what's amazing to me is a majority of people in Job's life did not understand how God works. But they were willing to give advice about how he works. Isn't that weird? Except for it's so common. You see, I don't know how many people talk about God but never, ever really spend time getting to know who he is. It would be like if I asked one of you girls that don't know my dad, he was here 20 years ago and he died over about 22 years ago, if I asked you to describe him for me. And if I were to bring you up and say, describe my dad to the audience, it'd be like, and then you just made it up, whatever it was. And then I describe my dad to the audience. Which one do you think you should believe? Probably me. Not because I'm smarter, by the way, but I did know him. So probably I would tell you a more accurate depiction of who he was. See, what happens so often is people want to tell you about God, but they don't know who he is. They haven't spent any time studying the Bible. They haven't spent any time thinking about God. They haven't spent time with God, but they're certainly willing to tell you about who he is. Now, I don't know these three guys. I don't know how much time they spent with God. I don't know. In fact, I don't even know how they spent time with God back then. You know what I mean? Directly spoke? Yeah, I'm not sure. But here's what I do know. They didn't get it right. It still didn't mean they weren't good friends. They just didn't get it right. They were messing with Job's mind. I'm telling you, it's hard sometimes when you try and figure things out. And you've got friends coming to you saying, you must be a bad person. And now you start thinking, I am a bad person. I know that. I know I'm sinful already. I understand that. But boy, you know, yeah, God is. Man, you mess up just a little. He really beats you up, man. I imagine Job, after these three guys, is scratching his head trying to figure things out. Like, yeah, I guess, I don't know. What did I? Wow. But remember what God said about him. He was an upright man. He wasn't a bad, he wasn't the guy that, no, he loved his family. He did things right. Sometimes we want everything to work just right because we do things right. I don't know if you are into football very much, but years ago, Reggie White used to play for the Packers, and his last interview was kind of fun to watch. It may not have been his last interview, the last interview I saw. And one of the guys asked him, you know, whenever you played, you were always double-teamed, triple-teamed, and they even showed sometimes where he had four guys on him. And he said, doesn't that bother you after a while? And Reggie had this little smile on his face and said, no. It makes me relevant. In other words, I'm playing out on the field. They have to deal with me. The better you are. Michael Jordan used to say the same thing. You know, it was like, doesn't it get tiring? These guys just beat on you like the whole game. It's like, no. You know what that means? That means I'm the guy they got to watch. Because I will win it. And they know that. Now, you may call that cocky, whatever you want to call it, but the truth of the matter is, when you get into a game and there are people who can turn the tide of the game, they usually take a beating. And you know why they're taking a beating? Because they're such bad people. No, because they're relevant. They actually can turn the tide of the game. And the other team knows that, so they beat on them. They want them to get sore. They want them to stop. when you understand that, you begin to understand the war a little bit that's going on as well. If Satan actually thinks that you're going to be relevant, if he sees that you're actually making a dent, he might avoid you totally. And then God might say, have you considered my servant? Now he can't avoid you because all of the celestial beings have heard this. And all of a sudden, this life that you thought that God was going to give you that was going to be so sweet and easy and wonderful just turned into Job. And nothing makes sense anymore. And all your friends are coming going, see, that God you serve doesn't take care of you too well. Except for the fact that you knew God and you know that no matter what happens to you, that as you trust him, because he's older than you and smarter than you and loves you, because when you trust him, you will see in the end that you win. You see, what's really cool about that is you cannot do that without knowing who he is. The three friends of Job, and for a majority of this book of Job, we see Satan unleashing the way that he loves to unleash, and that's through other people, through peers, through friends, through people who don't really know God, through people that say half-truths, through people that say, you know, if you're to go through what these guys said, some of it might be truthful in a certain way. I mean, really, if I'm going to go out and disobey God, do things, yeah, life's not going to be all that good. See, I know that. But this isn't what's going on here, even though you can take some of it and mix it and make it sound worse than it really is. See, a half-truth or not really knowing can be as mixed up as telling the lie. And then to know how much we're influenced, you do realize that our culture is very media-oriented. I mean, television, all that kind of stuff. And the reason we are isn't because of the generosity of the networks. It's because they realize they can influence you. And there's a lot of people say, no, they can't. They make millions and millions of dollars, not because they're wrong on this one, but because they're right. They know they can influence you. They know that they just got to make you feel like you're on the outside looking in. They've got to get enough people to say it a certain way so that you feel like, after all, 20 people said this, so it must be right. When I taught school, I used to have certain things that sometimes were nice to say, sometimes weren't. But I would walk in my class, I was a fifth grade teacher, and we had talked several times about the Supreme Court not being supreme. And it's a regular school, so you got to be somewhat careful. But still, I was in a very Jewish school, and I knew that they were very anti-abortion. And I used to go in and say, do you think abortion's right? And they go, no. I said, the Supreme Court said it was right. And that would bring a dilemma to them. Then I'd be quiet and do something else. I used to just like doing that. And then I would walk in the middle of the year, and I would just say, the Supreme Court, and they would all shout back, is not supreme! And my principal made me stop that. However, I wasn't trying to be disrespectful. I was actually trying to get them to think. And each time, in the context of things, I would say, look, they do give us the laws of the land. But God is the only one that's supreme. And if the Supreme Court ever says something against God, we go with God. Can you imagine saying that in a public school and not getting fired? It's interesting. When my principal said, I want you doing that anymore, I understood. I don't want to bring disrespect to the nation or the court or anything else. I just want to make a point to my kids. So then I would come in and say something else. I would come in and say, the majority. And they would go, it's just the majority. It's right. Because we went through a lesson telling them, the majority is the majority. It may not be right. It may be. But that's not what determines right. And they knew that. You see, that's the stuff that's hard for us to grasp. We begin to believe that the majority is right. If somebody comes to me, one of these guys I'm talking about that is doing different things, and they say, well, a majority of scholars say this, I would go, that's nice, but a majority is only a majority. Boy, Dave, you must be stubborn. I am. Not in what I know I'm not stubborn, but I am stubborn in the process. See, God, what he says is right, no matter if anyone else agrees or not. And I have to understand that. So my passion needs to be to understand him and his ways, not to understand what everybody said about him and his ways. And in that process, I will come to a conclusion. And I am still Dave, so I may come to a conclusion in a wrong way, but I will still come to one. And I always need to realize that God is going to be right in what he says. In the process, I do not hate individuals that disagree, whatever. See, they can be my friends. But I need to be careful not to allow them to influence me in a way that causes me to believe lies. And that's where partnerships come in. For example, I told you, conversations save lives. This is it. You're meeting with some friends. You're thinking about certain things. You know what? You're wondering about it. That's where you go to Dad and say, "Hey, Dad, let's go for a walk." Why? I got to ask you some stuff. I'm with friends, and this is what they're talking about and thinking about. What do you think about that? Let them talk to you about it. Why? Because they're disconnected from the emotional friendship kind of stuff there. But they are connected to you. And what they're going to do, hopefully, is think about what they can tell you to help you understand the situation so you can make a good, wise decision. You know, it's really interesting. Everybody goes through this. It's a hard thing to grasp, but you go through a two-stage learning process. One is conditioning, and then one is actually education. Conditioning, you might have heard the experiments they did with dogs, the Pavlovian dogs, you know, where they would feed them and ring a bell or something. And I used to do that with fish in my house. I had a fish tank, and I used to tap on the glass and feed them, just so I could tap on it, see them all go for food, and not feed them and laugh at them. You know, I mean, I would condition the fish to think, tap, 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 ah, food, boom, right? They weren't educated, by the way. They were just conditioned. And whenever I tapped on the glass, bingo, food. See, what happens a lot of times is we condition people. And that's not a bad thing. I'll give you an example. My youngest daughter, Sarah, I am trying to get that video to you, but our internet, she recorded it like this, huge. It's 5 minutes, but it takes up like a half a disc. You know what I mean? It's just huge. And so I'm trying to figure out how to get it reduced so I can show it to you. But my youngest daughter, Sarah, you know, she was just learning to walk, and we went out to the edge of the road by our house, and I actually, on a driveway, I painted a big white line across it so they could see that you don't go across that white line because I don't want you walking out in the street. And so I painted a line, and I got to the edge, and I said, "Sarah, you know, you got to be careful when you come out here because there's cars and trucks that come, and they could hit you." Now, I don't remember how old she was. She was just starting to walk and that kind of thing, so she's not really that old at this point. And she goes, "Why, Danny?" "Well, because you could get hit and get killed." And she goes, "What's killed?" "You could die." "What's that?" "You won't be here anymore." "Oh, yes, I will." I'm not communicating well, you know. I just realized I'm talking to somebody who has no concept of what I just said. But I would like to keep her out of the street anyway, if I can. So I told her, "If you go in the street, I'll spank you." "Whoa, got it." Now, all of you know that the goal was never to have her not go in the street. Otherwise, I spank her. I mean, that wasn't the goal. That wasn't the motive for anything. However, I was stuck. I needed to do something to preserve her life so that later she could make the right decision on her own. I hope that makes sense. Your dads, ladies, are in that position where sometimes they may have to tell you something for your own good, but what you're going to have to do later is realize what it is and learn yourself. Why? One day, we were walking to camp, and I forget how old Sarah was at that point, but we were walking, and I saw some fresh roadkill. I forget what it was, chipmunk, squirrel, something. And I said, "Sarah, see that? Yeah, it played in the street." Whoa. Guts all over, flies. She got it. It was that day we moved from conditioning to education. See, she's 29 now. If she was still going, "I can't go on the street, my dad will spank me." But boy, I would have messed up royal. That wouldn't have worked. But because we had some fresh roadkill, and because I was looking for that moment, and because she let me do it, because she was small enough, she had to. But she did get the reason. You see, there may be some things in your girls' lives that you're taught at home right now that dad and mom might say that you're going, I don't know. Trust them right now. Just trust them. But look for the real reasons as you grow older of why they asked you to do that. And one day you'll make those your own reasons. And when you do, you'll see you moved from conditioning to education. You've heard of a lot of people, maybe they get older and they get a little wild at times. Like, you know why? They're in between that conditioning education phase. And here's what I'm asking you to do during that phase. Cling to what you were told until you really make it your own and know why. It wasn't given to you randomly for no reason. Figure out why you're given whatever instruction might be. You see, sometimes friends don't give you the right advice because they don't know. It's really that simple. And we have to be careful. The danger I want to just inform you with is very simple. 3 out of 4 of your friends, there's a friend that comes later that actually gives some good advice, but 3 out of 4 of your friends probably don't know God, and when they speak about God, you probably shouldn't put a whole lot of weight on it. You need to have people in your life that know God that you can listen to, and you need to determine that one day you're going to be one of those people that know God. One of the young men I discipled up here that was in Nicolet Bible Institute was a pastor at a church for a few years, and he's quit being a pastor now, and he's going back to school. He wants to be one of those that can translate the Bible from all the original languages and make sure that the Bible translations are accurate. I thought, good for you. And let's go back to the Word. And one of the motivating factors, I think, it may not be, but is most of the Bible publishers right now, all but one, are not even Christians. Secular companies have bought the rights to the Bibles. That doesn't mean they've changed them, but it does mean they can. It'd be important that there's somebody out there looking to make sure the Bible still says what the Bible's supposed to say. You know, when you find somebody who really loves God, you need to listen. If you have a friend who really doesn't love God, doesn't know God, you need to be respectful. But you may not want to listen, at least to the advice. These three guys, good friends, sat in the ash heap, didn't know God. And I think they caused Job a lot more pain, because I am sure that he had to go through his head over and over again, like, man, is this true? Am I really a bum? Did I really do bad things that God's beating me up? We're going to find out tomorrow morning what happened actually with Job and how he responded to this. And the final point of what I see in the book of Job is very important. But the first three, dads and daughters can be partners on. You know how Satan works. He wants to destroy the good stuff. Don't let him. Turn off the TV once in a while. Talk to each other. Enjoy being with each other. Have a relationship that's worth having. Stop Satan in his tracks. He's trying to stop the good stuff, the relational stuff. Don't let him do it. Not only that, he's trying to mess you up on the concept of love. He wants you to think it's something other than it is. It's really simple. Loving God is a simple thing. Loving each other is. You just think of others before yourself. You obey God and respond to God. And then, if he doesn't get you in those ways, then he's starting to work you over with friends, community, public relations, whatever. Just whatever I can do to get you. And you got to realize, I still need to be respectful. But if they don't know God, I really shouldn't be listening to them about God. If they know how to change a tire, and that's what they do, fine. But if they don't know God, be careful not to give them that. And realize, you can be friends, and you can be respectful, and you can be nice to people who don't know God. But you should not let them influence your life. I'm not saying you should hang out with them all the time and that kind of thing. You could start thinking like them all the time. And that's something you could have a good discussion with Dad about. How do we do this in life? And tomorrow we'll talk about the final point, which I think may be one of the more important ones. Because this whole thing ends up very interesting. And I think if you love God and you walk with him, your whole life will end up kind of interesting. In the end, you will see that God was worthy of your trust. Because he will win. And all of us who actually listen to him will win with him. And that's what he desires. That's the moment Satan is not looking forward to. That's the moment he wants to ruin. He wants to ruin what God wants to give us. He just wants to ruin it. He's never going to have it, by the way, and he knows that. So just let's ruin yours. Don't let it happen. Don't let him do that. Don't let anybody ever take from you what God has given you. Don't let him do that. That's just evil. Father, again, thank you that we could be together tonight. I thank you for these dads and daughters and the time that they have invested in each other. I pray that the rest of this weekend will be continue to be special, and that you will give them a bond for the rest of their lives that will be something that is extremely strong and something that you will use to show others in the world who you are and what your love is like. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.